If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Yeah, why should someone listen to this conversation? And what should they expect?
They should listen to this because it's a wild 90 minutes, but also there's a lot of love and knowledge being spilled on this podcast. They should, you know, hot people listen to Pod Friends. That's true. And now I am officially in the hot people club because I am a Pod Friends guest. So yes, you should listen to it because hot people listen to Pod Friends. And if you listen to Pod Friends, then you are a hot person. And yeah. And you can get the full tea on who Gia Worthy is. And while I feel like what I have to say isn't always, you know, said in like the most concise way, I feel like the points that I make are good ones, but also there's a lot of like self-love and appreciation for just the world around us. And it can be like a very euphoric 90 minutes for you.
Damn. And welcome to Pod Friends. I'm Matt Scott, and this week's guest is none other than Gia Worthy, who you will hear from in just a little bit. Gia and I spoke about blackness and her relationship with blackness as a black biracial person, blackness in Survivor and the Survivor Diversity Campaign, including like what I would consider to be a student's dream of writing a 20-page paper about Survivor, which I graduated from college about 8 years ago, but I am actively jealous of Gia for being able to do that and kind of turning her love of Survivor into something that ultimately helped earn her a degree. So we talk about the Survivor Diversity Campaign. We talk about Inside Survivor and the coverage she does there, representation and some of the unsung heroes of Survivor. And ultimately, so much of this podcast, of this time that we have with Gia, is learning from her about gender and cultural studies and about sexuality. We talked about HIV prevention and its link with intimate partner violence and the work she's done there. We talked about something we shared, which is some of the work we've done engaging students, both while we were on campus as leaders in a student organization called RHA, the Residence Hall Association, putting on events and advocating for students. Gia mentions, you know, OCD and all these other elements of who she is and kind of how she's grown up, including being bullied. And I'm just so grateful for Gia for opening up and sharing so much of herself and sharing how, of course, she's still on the journey. But it's not that important to focus on where you want to be when so often we're thinking ahead, we're thinking about where we need to be. We're not focused on being in the moment. And Gia helps remind me of that through a really powerful, informative, educational conversation. And so buckle up, because there's so much that Gia shared. And I'm so thankful along the way for the insight there. And I am excited to listen back. But I don't want to hold you back from hearing from Gia. More than anything else, I just want to say, for me, for Gia, for everyone who's guests on Pod Friends, it means so much to hear from you all about why these stories matter, how they resonate. And again, with this podcasting thing, like sometimes it feels like no one's listening. And of course, we know that so many people are tuned in and are listening and are paying attention. And, you know, these are conversations, just like conversations with friends. But what makes it so powerful is hearing from you about how these conversations inform you, how they resonate, how they, you know, inform your life and how you look at the world. And I'd invite you to think about that. Like, how has a Pod Friends conversation informed or inspired or helped you figure out your own path? How has it helped you feel less alone? How has any of these conversations helped you figure out who you are? There are so many questions. And as you think about these things, I would love to encourage you to send in a voicemail. I still have a goal by the end of this Pod Friends season of doing a voicemail episode just with your voicemails. And so you could leave a voicemail at speakpipe.com/podfriends. You could find that link in the show description, the show notes, if you go to the episode page and the details, wherever you're listening to the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, all of the links are included in the description below. And so I really look forward to receiving your voicemail messages, again, not only about the latest episodes, but really about any of these Pod Friends episodes over the course of this journey, because I would love to use those as an excuse to go back and celebrate and honor a lot of the conversations that I've been so thankful to have with everyone who's been part of Pod Friends. But for now, number one, I want to encourage you to subscribe to Pod Friends if you're not already subscribed wherever you're listening. Like literally, if you're listening on your phone, if you're listening on your computer, you could go wherever you're listening, hit that little subscribe button, even turn on the notification bell. This comes out every Sunday night or by Monday morning. But, you know, it never hurts to hear when the episode's out, when it's coming up, because it's, you know, hope that you'll tune in and you'll pay attention to who's up next, as we have some exciting guests planned. You could subscribe to the podcast also by going to robhizzawebsite.com/podfriendsfeed. That link is in the show notes. Leave 5 stars, leave a review. I hope to read a bunch of those in the voicemail episode I do down the line. You could watch on YouTube at robhizzawebsite.com/YouTube to see our lovely smiling faces along the way. You could suggest a guest for Pod Friends at bit.ly/podfriendsnom. That's bit.ly, bit.ly/podfriendsnom. And you could subscribe to be a Rob Has a Podcast patron at robhasawebsite.com/patreon to support this wonderful community, the creators in this community, the people in this community, all of the things that we're able to do, from enjoying these podcasts and patron exclusive podcasts to community events to games and the like. robhizzawebsite.com/patreon for more on that. Also, I'll say before we dive in, you can use #PodFriends on social media if there's anything that jumps out, or when anything jumps out from this episode. And you could tweet me at @MattScottGW and at @HeyPodFriends for more. But without further ado, let me introduce this week's guest, Gia Worthy. Making her way to the podcast, hailing from the Bay State, the Baked Bean State, the Pilgrim State, the Spirit of America, the home of Bosstown, hailing from Springfield, Massachusetts, she goes in, way inside Survivor. She's the delightfully chaotic, the wise, warm, welcoming, well-known, wondrous, wonderful, worldly, worthwhile, world-class, worthy, come on, thesaurus, please welcome Gia Worthy. I guess, like, the big question I have for you, because you did something that's so cool And I think would be a dream for a lot of people who are listening, who have done any sort of academic work, in that you actually wrote a paper about Survivor that I know you revised so many times.
Yes. But
I think that's so cool. I'm jealous of you. And I don't know. I'm just like curious for you to tell me all about how, like, all about that process of what the paper was, first of all. Yes. And like, we'll dive into it, but I'm still jealous, even 8 years removed from school.
I like to say that this was a paper that was like 20 plus years in the making, because I wrote this when I was in my grad school period. I did a major in, my master's was in gender cultural studies, but the thing that I really liked about this program was that it was interdisciplinary. So in undergrad, I did sociology. So I came into grad school with that perspective, but we had a lot of different students that came in with philosophy, or they did gender studies, or they did feminist theory, or anything along the lines of that. We had people that came in with an education degree and are just going right into gender cultural studies. But the thing that I really liked about it being interdisciplinary is that you could really vet, like, where do my interests lie and where can I make an argument, I guess, or a thesis topic around that. And I, for a very long time, especially once I got into school and kind of got a better flow for my areas of interest, I really wanted to write a paper about Survivor, specifically about Black contestants in Survivor. And I didn't have a full idea yet of exactly how I wanted to frame it. But growing up, so I watched Survivor since the All-Star season in real time. So I was about nine then. And I watched a few episodes here and there about from All-Stars. And then after Amber won, I'm like, this is great. Let me, like, what's out? Like, what do we get another season? Like, what else is happening? And then season nine was Vanuatu. So I got to watch that, the full season in the real time. And honestly, I think that was just the perfect season to start with. I just loved all the characters in it. It's got a fairly easy to follow storyline and also just a really great underdog story. So it was just a really easy season to get invested in right away. But as I watched not just Vanuatu, but the couple seasons after that, I noticed that, you know, that as someone that is biracial, I have a Black parent and a white parent, but I do identify as a Black biracial woman. But as a kid, you know, you notice, like, I had people of all different races and backgrounds for various different reasons in my life all the time. And having a Black family, obviously, like, I have Black people around me a lot, but then for watching it in real time, it's like there's always, especially in the first couple seasons that I watched, there was always only like one or two Black contestants, and they would get voted out by either, you know, like they don't fit in, or oh, they're rubbing people the wrong way, but it's really just like, oh, they don't fit in. And you kind of wonder as you get older, I'm like, well, what are they actually doing to not fit in? Especially, there are a couple that I can think of immediately coming to mind where I was just, as a little kid, I didn't have a name for it. It was my very own problem with no name, but it just didn't sit right with me, even as a kid. And someone that wanted to see more examples of positive, effective Black players in Survivor. And then we got to Survivor Fiji, which is one of my favorite seasons. And I think that's probably the season that I'm just as a content creator most synonymous with, which for good reason. I've podcasted and written about it a lot. But I was a big fan of all of the Black players on that season. And to get the final three of Earl, Cassandra, and Dreams was such a dream to me. And I had not known about Vesepia's win at that time. So Errol was the first Black contestant I've ever seen win anything, not just Survivor, but just first Black person I've seen win like any type of game show like that. And as someone that had a lot of, for someone that like got a lot of comfort in Survivor as a kid, because I had like, my upbringing wasn't hard, but like it was, you know, I had trouble fitting in middle school. I was bullied a bit. So I found a lot of comfort in Survivor. So then to also have that show and have the final three and have Earl, who is such a fantastic winner, and win unanimously, it was just all of these things coming together. And it's just like, this is why I watch the show, for moments like this. And that stuck with me throughout the years, even though Fiji is not considered a great season by a lot of people. They're wrong, but like they can have a right to their wrong opinion. And there's this reason that I'm saying all of this. So like it's moments like that that always stuck with me. And then as I learn more about the social constructs of race and particularly Blackness in a way that I was better able to articulate it, as I got into grad school, I was learning this theory about positive and negative perceptions of Black identity. And there was a really great book by Raquel Gates that I read that really kind of inspired things like that. And I did. So basically what it says is that if you have like a positive perception of Black, like a Black identity, a Black person, actor, character, or like a Survivor contestant, there, we're not saying positive, like this forwards the Black race, or, you know, things that are actually can be very, what's the word for it? Like very regressive, I would say, in like in liberation and going towards what my goals for like Black perception in media would be. It's not saying that like if someone is a positive representation of Blackness, that doesn't mean like, oh, they are a good person or they are the best of the best. What that's really saying is that this is something that is easily digestible for all audiences. So primarily white audiences, so it's their proximity to whiteness or what we would say is like the values of the American dream. And a negative perception of Blackness would be someone that, while I would not like, they're not negative in that they are bad people or that this is an evil person we're seeing on TV, but it's more so that is a person that does not prescribe to traditional values in the same way that, you know, what people would call a positive Black perception was. So that's how I framed this.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
And just interrupt and like break that down a little bit, because I want people to be able to like digest that. And
I know it's really hard. It's really hard to frame it in the way I want to and like fit it in into like a 90 minute podcast.
Well, I think part of it, and we'll definitely like link to and encourage people to check out the final piece. But I think part of it, just to kind of stick with the positive and negative perceptions, like when you're talking about a positive representation versus a negative representation, whose like perspective is defining what that representation is? Is it like in the eyes of a mostly white audience, this is what a Black person should be, so this is a positive representation, versus like, this is what a Black person shouldn't be, so this is a negative representation? Yes. Is that what you mean?
Yes. And it's about like prescribing essentially to respectability politics, this idea that if, in this case, Black people, because it's really, you know, like you could do a study on what this means to people of other races as well. But since I am Black, that was the that like my framework, because there are limitations to it. You know, like I am speaking from a Black perspective. I am going by what my experiences are. But this idea that if I am respectable enough, I will be able to make it in the way that maybe other Black people who aren't prescribing to respectability politics aren't able to make it. And it's false. That's not a real thing. But And it's actually very harmful that people think that, oh, if we just act a certain way, it's like victim blaming. If you act a certain way, that you won't experience racism. Like, racism falls on people of color, and that if we just acted a certain way, then we wouldn't have to deal with those hardships. That is that is not a great ideology to follow through. And I dedicated a lot of my work to pushing back against that idea. But so for this paper, I focused, because there are so many Black contestants that I want to talk about in my scope of Survivor. I had said that the, you know, all of the Black contestants that have been on have impacted me in some way, whether it was they were their first boot or they won the whole game. But Fiji holds a really special place in my heart. I was a huge fan of Earl, Cassandra, and Dreams. I was very much Team Dreams on the car deal.
Right.
And those were the type of things that, like, stuck with me. But then when I went into grad school, I wanted to focus on it about how, like, Survivor frames Blackness. And I got a lot of inspiration from the roundtables that RHAP did, the different conversations that were being had about that time, about how we wanted an increase in diversity in
Black voices of RHAP. I think is some of those, in case folks want to check those out too.
Yes. So, and realize that there was this strong Black alliance in Fiji that we don't see anyone acknowledge. There are little hints throughout that you can see as you watch, but this is a really positive thing. And this happened over a decade before, like, the cookout or the alliance, the camp out, as we call, like, the alliance in Survivor 41. But so I took those ideas and I wanted to use this positive negative representation framework to discuss how we view the what at the time was our four winners, our four Black winners. And I used their seasons as examples and included about how, you know, things like their confessional counts, whether they like how they react in issues of conflict and their feeling of belonging in it, and also their relationships to other Black contestants on the show. So at that point, every male contestant sat with at least one other Black person when they won their season. And in the case of Vesepia, a large part of her journey is defined by her friendship with Sean. So that was, you know, that was part of it. And that was, so that was essentially what the paper was. And it started as like a 20 page research paper. So it's a lot of theory, a lot of citations. It eventually got condensed down into a 11 page conference paper. So what that means is I went to a pop culture conference through my grad school. And everyone has different topics, and I use that as a base for my presentation for this conference. So it was like it was a shorter version, but it covered all the main points in it. And then eventually, as it got to its final format, I condensed it to an even shorter paper with the article that's now posted on Inside Survivor.
Yeah,
and that is a much shorter like version of it, but I feel like it's the most accessible, and that's the thing that's important to me, and something that was always really important to me as a grad student, is that I want my work to be easily digestible and accessible to people. And I really appreciate people that can explain these complex ideas in simple terms, as you could tell by my rambling essentially from this from like
no you're an academic, we'll let you just keep going. Like, this is education. And so, we'll dive into so much more, but I think that all of this grounding is important, and it ties in with so many, you're answering so many questions that I had about this paper. So please go on, Gia, Queen Gia, wearing the crown. You can't see the crown, but it's there. It's there.
So I really appreciate players or people that can explain like complex ideas really easily is one of the things I actually appreciated the most about Marianne's win. I felt like she could really explain these complex ideas about how to play Survivor and her perceptions of the game and how people might perceive her. But she explained it so well and like in a very easy to understand. Like, I didn't have the words to explain how her position was in the game until she gave me those words through her confessionals. So
yeah,
that type, that is a talent that is rare. I am trying to work towards it. I am sort of there. I think that's part of the reason why I enjoy writing so much is that it, I can go back as I find the words and re-edit it. It's not so much like off the tip of my tongue or like on the, but like fly by the seat of my pants type situation.
Wow, there's so much here. And I appreciate you kind of giving the background of like a bit of what that paper was about and like what your journey is to it. But as like a, for a personal perspective, because I'm sure that they're like, for me, I want the 20 pages. I want all of it. Is it out there anywhere in like its 20 page or 11 page form?
It's on my computer. So I can definitely, that wasn't actually somewhere. It started as a research paper for a class. It wasn't actually my thesis paper for all, for like my final project of grad school. But so I have it saved. I hold my work very dear to me. So I do have it saved. I have it edited and everything. So I do keep it with me, but it's not published anywhere. But I'm always happy to talk about it or share it with anyone that is interested in reading the full thing. Jamal Shipman and Davey Rickenbacker have both read like the full thing, which was so nice of them. They did not have to do that, but it meant a lot to me that they did read it and they had very nice things to say about it. So that made the Survivor nerd in me very happy.
Yeah. And I could imagine like it's not even it would not even be a favor to you for a lot of us to read it, because there's so much that you could, like for me personally, there's so much I've learned from Survivor. I actually started watching in real time Survivor Cook Island. So there's a lot there that's really interesting and different than a lot of Survivor. And actually Cook Island's in my class of 2020 audition, my take or what I said about Survivor was like, Cook Islands, definitely an underrated season. And I ended up like loving that. Just, I think part of it's the diversity. There's a lot looking back in the top 40 countdown that we did where I'm like, I don't, you know, like things could have been done better, but it's interesting because that's like the same time, or not the same time you started watching, but definitely around that like Earl era, and very formative. And maybe the reason that I stuck with it, because I think if I joined in the like 20s at some point, I probably would have just fallen out. Like One World, I don't think I would have. I'm pretty sure I would not have watched another season. So
that's actually amazing, because my RHAP audition was that Fiji was underrated season. So same ideas, but like
my idea.
I know. I snuck into your interview. It was like,
how dare you?
So what are the girlies all talking about? And was like, all right, I got it. I was going to try to audition with like a simpler version of what I wrote in terms of like Black Survivor in general. But I was like, no, that's too complicated. I'm going to be doing just like what I'm doing now, which is like rambling. And then eventually I will like get to the point I'm trying to make. And I felt like Fiji, I could go on for Fiji for so long about just how it's underrated and people are wrong for ranking it so low. Very wrong. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, there's a lot
I
there.
Hope they and I feel mean- bad.
And you did say, because I agree, I'm allowed to be petty and hope they feel bad. Because you did say, and I'm glad you said that, because you said earlier, like, people are entitled to their opinions, but all, and which is true, you know, but also there are reasons that people might perceive that season as not being as good. Jeff Probst, mm-hmm. comment being one of the big ones, maybe.
Yes.
But, you know, I think that what you're kind of processing and talking to is so interesting, because for me, Survivor has been a reflection of so many of my experiences, like
yes.
as a person. And there's a lot to learn about it in from the identity perspective. And then about Blackness alone, there's so much we could see and learn, like, in watching it. But, you know, actually, the thing that's on my mind with this, because we could go in so many directions, is yes. like right now I'm on Survivor Philadelphia. I'm actively like, Gia, you think I'm here? You think I'm here right now at home? I'm actually in Wissahickon Park in Philadelphia. I also don't know how long I will make it into the season. So that's a fun one. But no, in reality, you know, part of me in playing that game and kind of getting the experience I did, which like is not real Survivor, you know, for whatever kind of amount of that I got to have, I saw so many parallels with Survivor. And I'm curious from your perspective, like as someone who is like in this Survivor world, one, you've done like orgs, online reality games. Have you done any LRGs live reality games too?
No, that's on my bucket list eventually, but it's just been one thing after another in terms of it's either it's work or like this year I've been saving up my vacation days and stuff. And also just like money to get there is another, yeah. you know, like I have not done one yet. I would love to do at least one of them at some point, but I won't turn my head at the online reality games as well. I think there is mm-hmm. It's a great way to connect with people all over the world. And I have played a couple. It's not my favorite way yeah. of like getting involved with the Survivor community, but I have enjoyed my experiences overall. But I think it's more like when I play, I don't take anything really personally, I'd like yeah. to say, like overall. I went into like all of our tribal councils basically just kind of like expecting me to get voted out or get blindsided. Mm-hmm. And while you can't control how other people react to things, you have to like, you know, like you have to prepare for that. And it's not always pleasant, but I enjoyed my time playing the online orgs, and I really loved the people that I met that I still consider to be good friends, whether we've met in real life or we got to speak to one another afterwards. But it definitely gave me an idea about like how I would like to play Survivor if I ever like went on Survivor or like another competition show, or like the things that I'm good at versus the things that, you know, I probably wouldn't excel at out there. Like, guys, I'm sorry if I will not be a challenge beast. I'm sorry. Not, yes. I get
no,
by on my charisma.
No. You will.
No. I will not be a challenge beast.
Yeah, you got the muscles. Got them.
Oh, my God. No. It's just not happening for me. It's okay. I've accepted that about myself. I get by on charm and charisma only. So... But it was fun. It was like a good time. And I've won two before, which I felt like very honored to do.
Wow.
But yeah. It definitely helped develop more empathy for the types of things that Survivor players would actually go through in the island. Yeah. 'Cause like, to be honest, I hated voting people out. And I know mm-hmm. that's like the function of the game, but I just don't enjoy having to essentially like single someone out to vote out and hope yeah. that other people aren't doing the same thing to me and lying to people. Like, that's not something that I love to do outside of like a game context, but in a game context, you know, like this is something that has to be done for the game to move forward. And I do want to do well for myself. So yeah. when I'm in game mode, I call it my Monopoly mindset. Because ooh. yes,
not
the
Monopoly.
Whole thing. Yes,
so no.
There,
no, Monopoly is the most
it.
Vicious game. It's more
That's
vicious
exactly
than Survivor.
It. So yeah. with the Monopoly mindset, so I mm-hmm. tend to play Monopoly with my siblings or like with my family. Like that is who I have played Monopoly with before,
yeah.
and like an extensive version. Like we have gotten through games of Monopoly. I won,
oh,
but
wow.
like you know, like that's That's spoiler. Secondary. But like, despite the love and respect I have for my siblings, it like they are all dead to me as Monopoly starts. You know, like it is not. It is exactly that. Like the competitiveness comes out. It's like all your friendships and loyalties go out the door. So it is just like, it is just that kind of mindset where it's like, yeah, we'll be friends afterwards. But like in the game, it's like, I want to do well. I want to put the time and respect that I know I can into the show and to the people that work hard to make those games happen. Yeah. And I wanted to push myself. I wanted to see how far I could go in these games or what some of my strengths and weaknesses in a game format is. I know I can be initially like hard to understand, I guess. I'm trying to think of the right word.
I won't like, vote you
perspective.
Out.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
It's cool.
It's okay. I understand. Perceptive. I want to be like a perceptive person. I can be afraid to speak out first. Like, you know how hard it was for me to like convince myself to even audition for RHAP. I am not someone that like by nature is like a go-getter. I'm not just like, yeah, I'm going to go audition for podcasting on reality TV because I have a lot of good things to say. And even in my audition, I was just like, oh, I just thought of all the things I could do better. But that's one of the things that I really appreciated about seeing all the other class of 2020 people, because I feel like I learned a lot about like what made them really good and what made them the best at what they do.
Yeah.
Like yourself, Matt. And then I can kind of take that into like how I podcast in the future. It'd be like, all right, like there are ways that I can improve how I speak or how I do podcasts. And I love taking notes from the other people that I have come to know and love in that community. And it's the same thing with Orcs, is that there are people that I met and really cherish from my time in there. And I really appreciate the fact that I can learn from them and befriend them and kind of expand my friend network as well.
Oh my gosh. Like there's so much here. And I think what's really interesting, again, you touched on this, but there are so many parallels, like as a fan, as a listener of these podcasts or someone who watches Survivor, and you do gain an appreciation by actually playing it and kind of understanding like, oh, that thing that I thought I could do to win or to get further or like to make it in the game, like, oh my gosh, it's a lot more complicated than like any of us really think until we're in those situations. And even then you have to imagine the lack of food, the lack of in the case of an online reality game in org, like the lack of being in the comfort of your own home and your fuzzy slippers and pajama pants or whatever, like there's a big difference. So I think there's a lot there, and I appreciate just kind of what I'm learning about you in your explanation, which is like definitely there's the competitive streak, which I relate to, of like wanting to win, whether it's Monopoly or whatever the game is. And then there's also this piece of like, you know, that, oh, it sucks. Like, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings or break their hearts along the way. I'm so curious, though, because you mentioned like as you were kind of talking about your journey a little bit, like just growing up, and you mentioned dealing with bullying at some point, but I'm just curious, like overall, to kind of lead us to that point, like what was beyond Survivor and these shows, what was growing up like for you and where were you growing up? Like, what was that dynamic? There's so much there too, because I'm even like, especially as like a Black biracial person, but also as like you. And so the floor is yours.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I grew up, I was born and raised in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's where I live now. Mm-hmm. And I have so for like the broader scope of things, I love my family very dearly. I have a very big family. I have my mom and dad, stepmom. And I am the oldest of five siblings. And I love my family. It's a ton of energy all the time. Mm-hmm. And really, my family is my biggest support system, like in everything I do, even if they don't always understand why my interests go in a certain direction. They have always been very supportive. And it is, you know, and I feel like my family is a really big part of who I am as a person. And like, mm-hmm. I love being a sister. I love being my oldest sister. I adore all my parents and I really appreciate everything they've done for me over the years. And I feel very fortunate that I have so much love in my life and that I have so many people that just want to see me be the best that I can be, or like be my most happy self, I think is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And I feel very fortunate in that. And while I had to, the one thing is that growing up biracial, for me at least, it wasn't, you know, like if I had questions, my parents would answer them. Like they, oh, you know, like they would give like their honest answers to any questions that I had, particularly about like my race and what that mm-hmm. meant to me. But because no one in my family is really like, there aren't really any other biracial women in the family, it's kind of like there are parts of it that I have to figure out what that means for myself, because that might not look the same as all of my brothers, or for, you know, like for my parents to have different experiences for different reasons. Like my father is a Black man, my mom is a white woman, and mm-hmm. they've always been very encouraging to me and like make sure that I had the tools I needed to figure out my race and what that means to me. But at the same time, I really believe that personal experience is the best form of research, not just in academia, but just how you figure things out for yourself and in your life. So there were some things that like I had to figure out for myself and what my race meant to me. And now I'm in a much more comfortable position for that. But it was a lot of realistically like trial and error, just like seeing what that meant to me, or how history helps me kind of figure things out. I'm a big history nerd as well. So there was just a lot. It was a lot of processes and kind of like figuring out what that meant to me. And I think that's part of the reason why I loved being in school so much and being like an academic or doing my master's, is that it gave me the tools to like better understand the social constructions of race, of gender, of sexuality, and like how my experiences fit into that. Like, what does this mean to me? Not just to what this means for our society, but also just how does this shape who I am as a person, or how can I use this to get a better idea of like who I am?
Yeah, that's really fascinating to me, especially because I think about how I relate to that. And it's not, you know, like I did my undergrad and studied mm-hmm. business administration and marketing, and kind of like that was what I did. And I also did creative writing because I really loved writing. Mm-hmm. But I think especially as I've kind of gotten older and into my adulthood, I've explored more of those topics of identity as a Black queer person and mm-hmm. as a Black queer man. And so there are so many of those questions and gaps that I think, or things that I've wanted to understand about my work, myself, but about the world. And it's interesting because like the way I've done that a lot is like interviewing people and talking with them in conversations, as opposed to like going to school to do that. But I do think it's like really notable, I guess, because like not everyone is so... the word that's coming to mind is like preoccupied, but not everyone's like so preoccupied with these issues of identity. And, you know, I just think it's fascinating. You kind of laid out like why those things matter to you. But was there like, were you interested in like doing anything else or focusing on something else in your studies and even in your career kind of thing? We'll talk more about your career, but like, were you interested in doing something that had nothing to do with identity at any point, or was that always like pulling you in?
I feel like that was always in the back of my mind, is that I always had a fascination with identity. Like, as a little kid, I told you about how I loved history, but like all my history reports or English reports, whatever, would be like on the civil rights movement, on Martin Luther King. Gosh. Like, I was like that kid that would recycle their Martin Luther King reports for like every year. But yes. Oh my God. No. Well, like, they would get spruced up and everything. Yeah. But like, I was a civil rights leader, like, buff, basically, for back then. And so I would do things like that. There was always an interest there. And like I said, my family would always encourage me to develop those interests. So, you know, they wanted to see me really take an interest in, like, reading and learning more. I really enjoy learning as much as I can about different topics. And so that type of curiosity has been strongly encouraged, and my family really helped me develop that love of learning, which I really appreciate from all of them. And there's always been an interest in identity in some way and another, even when I didn't know that's exactly what I was doing. I just knew that this thing interested me. But also, I feel like I've never really had like a dream job. I feel like it always changed, and that I was kind of down to do whatever piqued my interest at the time. Like, I went to a performing arts high school, so I had an interest in theater and writing and directing. So that was a lot of fun. I really was interested in like fashion and beauty. So like, there was a point in my life where I wanted to be like a cosmetologist. I wanted to be an actress. Ooh. I wanted to like be a teacher at one point. So it's just been all over the place. It's like whatever strikes my interest at that moment, that's the area that I would normally go towards.
Look, I think you should have been an actress, because I have seen you and played mafia games with you. And oh, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm on board with you, Gia. Gia is not lying. Gia is telling the truth. It is you. Look, I'm just saying, that's a backup career for you. If you.
Oh, Matt, I enjoyed playing mafia with you so much. Not just because you believed me, but
I've never been more sure of anything in my life.
I know. No one ever, honestly, it was very refreshing, because no one ever like believes me when we play mafia, or like no one ever takes me seriously. It's very sad, but yes, but that's fair. I like playing mafia just based on vibes. And then when we get the mafia role, you're just like, all right, let's see how this goes this time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, don't play mafia with Gia. And if you do, just know that you don't know what to expect.
I will say there's just no strategy with me. I am like going. I love playing games like that. They're just like, they're fun one day games that you can just, and you get to meet more people and interact with everyone and just kind of see everyone's style of play. But it is all vibes. It's like, whatever position I have, we're going to just see where it goes from there.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And I think it's cool to kind of like, I don't know, in a way, I feel like I'm like piecing you together a little bit, and like under just in what you've shared too. And it's cool that, I don't know, it's interesting that games overall like form such a between like Survivor and watching it and like digesting the game and processing it, but then also the social dynamics, and then also playing games, and then also being, what did you say? You didn't, what was your Monopoly name? The killer, the Monopoly killer.
The Monopoly mindset.
The Monopoly mindset. Yes. You're savage at Monopoly. So like, seeing that's all very interesting, but I also know, one of the things I know about you is that there's this stuff, and actually even within what you've shared, like there are all of these very real consequential topics, and you touched on like race in a lot of that. You also touched on like gender studies and mentioning that, but I'm kind of like, kind of maybe to ground us a little bit in like time-wise, let's say that you're like at the end of high school, at that point where you're being pressured, like, what do you want to do with your life? What's your future going to be like? Who, what are you going to do? What, like all of those horrible questions that adults pressure us with at times. Like, what was that next step for you to like decide to do the work that, or the academic work you're doing with like less, I mean, I kind of think I understand sociology and your studies of that, but I guess I wonder like where gender and cultural studies and sexuality in particular kind of came into the picture for you. And, you know, like what did that look like?
Honestly, I did not have a plan when I was going into like when I was finishing up high school. That's I okay. was struggling with my OCD at the time, which I didn't realize at the time was OCD, but it was a lot. There was a lot of, you know, things I needed to figure out beyond like what my next steps for my career were going to be. Like all those awful questions you got, I need to figure out what was going on, like with like my mental health and like how I could improve that. And eventually, you know, like this was a long process. It was a lot of therapy. It was evaluating some of the relationships that I had in my life. So again, like a lot of like social perspectives coming into it, a lot of identity things to consider as I was trying to get into a healthier place in my life. But then, so my family are all have some type of like public service job or like an interest in it in some way or another. My mom does a lot of farm stuff because she like rides horses. So she takes care of lots of animals and everything. My dad and stepmom both work in schools, and me and my stepdad have a lot of the same taste in like movies and shows and films and everything. So like there's always like those personal connections that ended that have always been a part of my life. And so eventually I was actually going to go start a major in social work because that seemed to be an area that made sense to me. But then when I was explaining my interest about how basically I just want to learn more about like the politics of like race, gender, sociology, you know, things like, or race, gender, sexuality. Right. And one of the orientation leaders that were there were basically saying like, you know, this sounds like you are interested in like sociology instead of social work. Mm-hmm. And they were right. I took an intro to a sociology class in my first year of school. I went to a community college and I was just hooked on it right away. It was so good. I learned so much during that time, and I continued to learn more as I moved up with my academic career. And I just fell in love with it. I just love this idea that I could have a job learning more about other people, but also just like learning more about how our social world works. And I think that's that's part of the reason why I love Survivor so much, is that what is that except learning more about the social world that is that little season, you know? So I always was appreciated of that. And I think like some of my relationships in high school, you know, like in terms of even like romantic relationships at the time and everything, they weren't particularly healthy. But I found a lot of solace in these sexuality studies or learning about like how different identities have done protest work in like in the history of that. And that is actually what led me to the job before the one that I had now, which is how I became an HIV prevention instructor, because I found the history of the AIDS movement so moving to me. And I feel like that intersection of race and the region that you live in and gender and sexuality all plays into those types of roles. But then like with HIV in particular, that is a movement that has so many social implications that it isn't just the virus itself. It is everything that surrounds that virus as well. And that was what really drove me to that career path too.
Yeah. It's interesting even to think about that piece of things with HIV, because whether, I mean, there are so many parallels that I see often drawn between like HIV and then even COVID was a major one. But now monkeypox is a whole other parallel that we're seeing. Yeah, exactly. So it's like there's just constantly like coming back to those comparisons and those dynamics. And then also something that I found, because, you know, thinking of like your HIV prevention work in college, one of the things I did was I was very involved in like sexual assault and consent oriented and healthy relationship oriented. Like I wouldn't say activism or advocacy, which was part of it, but it was also really like peer support. And I wasn't as involved with the HIV prevention side of things, but like a lot of my friends were, and there were orgs that focused on that. And one thing I think that's interesting is like the connection between HIV and HIV prevention, but also like intimate partner violence and how it all comes together. And I'm curious from your perspective, like, and maybe this is a tough question, but like from a 101 perspective, like what is it that people don't, like what is it overall that you would want people to know about like the HIV prevention and it's like all of this stuff? Because I always look at these conversations as like a time to for people to learn, including myself. Yeah. But like, yeah, like what's the thing that you would want people to know in short when it comes to like this very big topic that there's obviously a lot of stigma and stereotypes around?
Yeah. Actually, I'm really glad you asked me this, because the and your lead into that question as well, because the agency that I worked for as a HIV prevention instructor was a women's shelter. So we talked about those intersections all the time. And the thing that I learned specifically about HIV in the context of how we were teaching it was that the relationship is intertwined between the two. So what that means is that survivors of intimate partner violence have a higher risk of having HIV being transferred HIV at some point, or like living with HIV at some point in their life. And the reverse is also true, is that those living with HIV are more likely to experience intimate partner violence in their life. So, and I think that speaks a lot for itself, but also you think about the stigma that happens when you live with HIV, the stigma that happens when you are in a unhealthy relationship, however that may look like, and this assumption that you can just leave, or the assumption that with HIV, like, oh, just wear condoms, you know, or things like that. And it's the stigma that goes around it, because then we don't talk about it. And I think that's so unhealthy of us that we don't talk about these things. I can't tell you how many times people didn't know some of the easiest things to know about HIV as a virus, in terms of like, these are ways that you can transmit it. It's not just one group of people that can get HIV or can transfer HIV from one person to another. It's not just certain groups. Like, every population on Earth has the possibility of having HIV. There isn't like an increased risk factor just because like I'm a bisexual woman. That doesn't mean that I as an individual can like, that does not like make me any more or less receptive to HIV exposure compared to anyone else. One thing that I really, really push for people that want to know more of that is to learn about risk assessment. So, and what that means is that it's a case by case basis thing, but it was an idea that we really pushed when we were doing HIV prevention courses. And what it means is that we want individuals to look at their life and see what different aspects of their life could increase or decrease their exposure to HIV. So, do you have one partner? Do you have multiple partners? Mm-hmm. Are you on PrEP, which for people that don't know is a pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a prevention pill for can help decrease the likelihood of having HIV through sex or being exposed to HIV through sex. And we, you know, so we look at those different risk factors, and it can even be things like I did not test people for HIV, but other people did. And it was through like a finger prick. So like that's why you wear gloves, so that you're not exposed. If someone was HIV positive, you're not in direct contact with a fluid like blood where that could contain the virus. So those are the things that you think about like the different things in your life that can expose someone to HIV. And we really looked at the idea of HIV exposure through sexual relationships. Mm-hmm. And the thing about risk factors is that we don't, in a risk assessment thing, we're not saying stop what you're doing because having sex with multiple people is bad or something like that. Or don't use like intravenous drugs because you're a bad person if you use them or things like that. Right. So what we do is that we look at the things that are happening in your life and finding ways to minimize the risk as much as possible. We did demonstrations on all the different condoms and like preventative measures that are there, the protective barriers, what types of condoms are the best to use to prevent HIV from being transmitted from one person to another. How do you store condoms to make sure that they're safe and that they're not expired and things like that? Getting tested regularly. People should get tested regularly if you feel that there could be a chance of you having HIV. If you are sexually active, you should be getting tested regularly. If you're in a monogamous relationship, what does that relationship look like? Are you and your partner both monogamous with one another, things like that, the factors that can play into all these different ways that different risk factors of HIV, instead of naming and shaming, like what attitudes or what behaviors can be a bigger, can bring, give you a larger risk of HIV, then we're not saying, you know, don't do that because that makes you bad. And that, and like, you know, this is what, you know, then if you get HIV, you should have known that you gotten it or anything like that. Because that's a lot of times like what the attitude is towards that. But what we're doing is showing like, these are the ways to better protect yourself. And we want people to live their life with as little stigma as possible, but also figuring like, this is how we can best protect ourselves. And realistically, like whether you have, you know, just because you may have low risk behaviors doesn't mean zero risk. It doesn't mean that you can't get it. And it doesn't make you a better person for being a low risk person. I wish people really, it's easy to say that, but really drive it home to them. It's just like, you are not a better or worse person for having or not having HIV or having a higher risk of HIV or a lower risk. Like that does not determine who you are as a person or your value as a person.
Right.
And that attitude, and it's not just with HIV, even though like with my job, that was, you know, we framed it in a context of HIV, but then even as like growing up as a woman, it's like, you know, like you're, sexuality or your sexual behaviors does not place value on you as a person. That is a part of who you are, but that is not who you are. And it doesn't determine whether you are, I hate framing things as like good or bad people, but I feel like that's often how the world perceives it. And like, that is not how you determine value or worth as a person. And if you are doing that, stop it.
Yeah, I mean, the other piece of it is that, you know, I'm sure we both wish it was like that much easier for people to just stop it. And part of that is like, one, looking in the mirror and kind of even just like hearing the sound of your voice, I hope helps people question like, what are my attitudes toward not even just HIV specifically, but like all the things that kind of, I don't want to say that revolve around it, because I guess that's not really how the world works, but that are tangential, that are related, like sexuality as a great example, something that, you know, I've kind of become more and more aware of over the last couple of years, especially like, and I've talked about it on Pod Friends, but like growing up going to Catholic school, like from kindergarten to the end of high school. And, you know, like there are a lot of things that are embedded in us, not necessarily just, it, definitely not just because of like Catholicism, and this is not about Catholicism, but like thinking of religion, thinking of culture and customs, and like what we're told is okay and what we're told is not okay. It causes us to have views of things that we might not even be aware of, like it's even stuff that's like slut shaming and like, oh, look at him or her for like whatever their behavior is, or you know, whoever they choose to have sex with or how they dress. And it's like, but why? I always love questions, because questions really help us get to like this point of really confronting ourselves, like, okay, but like, why do you think that, why are you looking down on that person, or why do you think that they're trashy, or you know, whatever, like insert word here. And like we don't ask those questions nearly enough, because I think we kind of just like accept that that's the way that things are. We're like, oh, okay, like that person is worse than me, or less than me, or not as careful as me, or you know, not as deserving of love as me because of the decisions that they make with their body and their life. And that's not fair to them.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you framed it like that, because that's really at the core of like the type of work that I enjoy doing, is that I don't want people to experience that same type of judgment that I experienced when I was younger, like whether it was middle school or high school. For different reasons. And but we live in a culture that likes to place value on people based on certain attitudes, or certain like your appearance, or the not even like the decisions you make about like your romantic or sexual relationships, but even the presumptions of what you about your so the assumptions that this is how you have decided to live your life, or this is your relationships, or this is your sexual partners, or anything like that. It doesn't even have to be true. But even if it is true, that doesn't determine a person's value, or does not speak on how, whether that person is a good friend. What music does that person like? Is that someone that I get along with? Is this someone that I vibe with? Like, that is not like the value. Oh, the worth of somebody, first of all, is not determined by me. Like, I do not determine the worth of other people, but as no individual can determine the worth of other people. But the even the presumptions about like people's race, religion, social relationships, romantic relationships, everything like that, that doesn't really like determine the worth. It can just be another fact about the person. And not even a fact, because they could be like, not everything is black and white. It's like, it's, and finding it's not, the less we look at things as such a dichotomy of like, this thing is good or bad, this person is promiscuous, or this person's a prude, or, you know, this person is very religious or not religious at all, that the less we look at things as such a dichotomy, the more we are able to actually get an understanding of people and be more accepting of other other personalities, other behaviors, other ways of life. But also, I feel like having that mindset has made me happier with myself as well. I don't enjoy judging people or looking at people. And I feel like when I was like that, it was when I was unhappy with my life for various reasons. Right. And I, you know, like it makes me a happier person to just appreciate the things that make everybody different. And that's why I'm so interested in like the Survivor Diversity Campaign, or like looking at how social relationships or identities really shape individuals.
Gia,
I see you. See you right now. You are wearing your yellow shirt, your Pod Friends yellow. And I'm afraid you're going to take my job is what I'm going to say.
No. So. Oh, my God. I could never upstage you, please. Like, it's very kind of you to presume, but no.
That's a famous last words. And it's like Pod Friends with Matt Scott. Cross out his name. Pod Friends with Gia Worthy. Because, like, there's so much there that I love to explore and, like, often think about and dig into. And, like, again, questions are a superpower. Like, asking these questions and, like, questioning how we look at things is not a bad thing. It because, like, I remember a teacher I had in high school who used to kind of call it like updating your map, and that might have been a concept from a psychologist. M. Scott Peck is his name, so that might have been from him. But it was like, as in this one class, it was actually very cool that we got to do this in my high school, in my Catholic high school, like reading a psychology book and like talking about I'm talking about all these theories, and it's The Road Less Traveled by M. Scott Peck, or A Road Less Traveled, one or the other. But anyway, like, yeah, it's so important to update your map and kind of figure out where you are. And speaking of maps, I'm trying to go for a segue here. Speaking of maps, and there are lots of places, Gia, that have maps.
Yes.
Campuses have maps of them. And I actually, so in my research of, well, one, like, I know that now you like work in the student engagement world, which I want to talk about, but in my deep research at stalking of you before this interview, I found out that you and I have something in common, which you are part of the Residence Hall Association, RHA.
Yes.
Your RHA on your campus. Okay, wait, I need to interview about this because this was a huge part of my, speaking of identity, for a long time. I still have a lot of close friends who are through that. Tell me, did you have a notable RHA experience? Is there tea? I feel like there's some tea or something.
Oh my God. I feel like you're going to judge me so hard for
it. No, I won't.
Like, so we heard about the RHA through our like club fairs that the undergrad would have. And I'm going to be fully honest with you. They said like, oh, they do elections. And I wanted to be the president of my residence hall. And that's how I got involved. It was literally like, I'm like, well, you have to meet once a week. I'm like, I don't care what the responsibilities are. I want to sign on my dorm room that says, I know we're not supposed to call them dorm rooms in residence hall association, but like, I've always been a rebel, so I'm going to call it dorms. Yeah, so I wanted a sign on my dorm that said I was the president of Hampton Hall. And guess what? That's exactly what I did. And I got a nice little piece of paper pasted right above my door to say, like, I was the president. It was great. Yeah, so that's kind of what I did. That was my little, like, I craved power at a young age as I could get it. And so I did a year of like just as a hall member. So like not on our what we call the executive board, which is basically like the president, vice president, secretary, like things
overseeing
like that.
All of the halls and all of the members. Yeah. Right.
So I did one as like a hall member, and that was OK. It was fine. It was something to do, but I kind of wanted to do a little more. It just wasn't like where my heart was at that time. But then there was an opening to do event coordinating, basically. So there was a position on the e-board that was like smaller events, essentially. So you just do like small little things throughout the school year. I can't even remember what the name of it was, but it was like small community planning or something like that. So I got that position and it was a lot of fun. And then I applied for the like large event programming position and I received that. And that was where I kind of developed like an appreciation for event planning, but also just making some events better to increase like student retention, get people to attend these events and enjoy themselves while they're there. And it wasn't always a success. I learned a lot in that time, but I, you know, I developed some experience for how to plan events. And I took that to me with grad school, where I continued to do that as I worked in the provost office. When I got closer to my graduation date in my master's program, I was going to try to stay in Boston and apply for positions on college campuses because I had all this experience working in college offices. Yeah. Well, guess when I graduated from grad school?
Pandemic?
Yeah, May 2020 was when I graduated. Not a lot of events were happening. Yeah, so all the positions that I was hoping to apply for were no longer available. Schools were not hiring anywhere. We didn't even know, like, what the future was going to look like at that point. So you couldn't even get an idea of, like, would these positions open up in a year or not? Mm-hmm. Everything that I was hoping to at least try to do kind of got put on pause. And while I'm not thankful for the pandemic, I'll just make that very clear, but I am thankful that I started as an HIV prevention instructor before I went to my current job as a event. Essentially, I'm planning events with students in my current position, but I was able to use all of that experience, but then I was also able to enrich the other interests in my life, like the teaching about like race, gender, sexuality, which is what I did a lot of as an HIV prevention instructor. And now I'm doing similar things, but in a different way through my current job.
Super badass. We love it. We love a queen who gives back, who makes the world a better place. And I don't know. It's cool to see. It's always interesting because I, like, on social media, I'm Matt Scott GW. I'm like actively low key. I need to try to get Matt Scott. I need to get Matt Scott as my handles, because it would drive me crazy to have like a bunch of different handles. But the GW is George Washington University, where I went. And I had that in college, actually, because of, like, it was some kind of Twitter thing that we did. This must have been like 2011, 2012, where the dean of students was like, tweet me. And I was like, ooh, I need to have a better Twitter name that's very official to tweet him. And so I added the GW on, and then I never changed it. And to the point where I have some people who like call me Matt Scott GW, which is kind of funny. But the reason I mention this is because I think student affairs and like working with students is such a particular path. I'm glad that I didn't do it, even though there was like a lot of pressure. People who said, oh, you love this school so much, like you would love student affairs, which like I love what I do now. So I'm glad that I didn't do that. But like, for those who are kind of like, look, I mean, one, I'm kind of curious, maybe less about like the work that you do and you like talking about that, but like, where are you interested in going in terms of your life? See, I'm asking the question that I was saying that all those people ask at the end of high school, or like when you're 16, 17, 18 or so. But like, do you have an idea maybe of like where you hope to take things? Or maybe if I ask it in a different way, like if you had a magic wand, what would that future potentially be for you? What would be some elements for you? I asked a million ways just to give you a million ways of answering.
This is such a big question. And I wish I had this beautifully said, perfect answer that just completely encapsulates like everything I am as a person with an air of mystery. So everyone's like, what's Gia gonna do next? And I don't know. I think the pandemic put a lot on pause for a lot of people. And I'm still trying to figure things out for myself. But I will quote from Abbott Elementary, Mr. Johnson, sometimes a dream can also be a distraction. And I want to enjoy everything I have in the moment. I have such a wealth of amazing friends online and in person. I love podcasting. I love writing about my favorite shows. I'm enjoying my job. I have an incredible family that has always supported me. I would love to, honestly, I want to be able to travel more, and I want to be able to be financially comfortable and enjoy the work that I'm doing. So if that means I stay in student affairs, then maybe I build a career up in that. I've considered trying to get certified as a sexuality educator, but again, that's a lot of money. So I'm trying to like figure out how I can financially do that. I've thought about going back to get a PhD, but that's a very big commitment. So I have to think about that a lot. But at the end of the day, I just want to be the most happy person I can be and enjoy the things that bring me joy in my life, but also be financially comfortable enough that I can maybe treat myself a little. I am always treating myself, so I can't just say like act like this doesn't happen on a regular basis, but I want to go on more trips. I want to travel more. I love to explore, whether that's my neighborhood that I've lived in for 20 plus years or just like do day trips different places. And I would love to just have the stability to do that more. I want to learn more. At the end of the day, I want to learn as much as I possibly can. And I think traveling is a way that I can do that. And I want to get to a place where I can do that more.
The thing, there's so much that's really powerful about that. But one thing I really appreciate, which, you know, I know that I have to remind myself of, is like living in the moment and just kind of appreciating where you are, because everything's about where am I going? What's next? What's like the, you know, it's all about that. We have a culture that really pushes us to always not be in the moment, but to be on that next step or like 10 steps down the line or like 5 years down the line or 10 years down the line or whatever. And it's like, yeah, like just sometimes you just need to kind of feel the vibes of like, like how do you feel is kind of like the thing that I think is important to assess. And how does something make you feel? And then if it makes you feel good, and if it's also healthy and like not, you know, harming people, like, like then like go with that and like follow that path. But like, we're not often in our culture encouraged to like feel. And when I say in our culture, I mean like in the US culture, like we're not necessarily encouraged to feel. And that's often discouraged and looked down on. And so I love like what you're saying about here are the things, like some of the pieces that I know resonate with me, and like I don't know how all the pieces will come together. But if I kind of like follow those things I know I like, then things will go in the right direction. So that's deep. And you know, we could be here forever. We could be, but we could, but I want to, like, as we kind of start to wrap up, I want to just kind of circle back less to Survivor specifically, but more thinking about you and your roles with RHAP, with even with like Silent Podcasts, with the Survivor Diversity Campaign, with Inside Survivor and Martin Holmes and all the things and people. Like, what does being part of this RHAP, I'll call it RHAP Plus. Ooh, I just made that up. What does this RHAP, what does being part of this RHAP Plus community mean to you? And like, what has that meant? Because I guess it's been about 2 years since, you know, you've been part of the class of 2020, but like what has that been like, and why do you continue to be part of it?
Well, for one thing, there are not very many people in my life, in my immediate proximity, that watch Survivor or the shows that I really love to watch and talk about it in depth the way that I like to. So on a very basic level, it means that I have a larger group of friends and that I'm able to discuss one of my favorite, actually, well, like Survivor is my favorite show. So I get to discuss my favorite show at the level that I want to discuss it at. And I feel like that's very important to have. And I hope that I am that friend for other people as well. But I think that what it also means is that I have, and I do consider like the people that I podcast with and the people that I interact with regularly, I do consider them my friends. So it means that I have a larger group of friends, which is always great, but then that I have people that encourage me to be my most creative self, and I encourage them to be their most creative self, and that I can just throw out ideas at the wall and you get either immediate support or feedback on how you can make it better. And I really get to nurture my love of reality competition shows and put it into a creative format. But I have other people around me that are encouraging me to do better, to be better. But also what I'm doing now is great. So it's just like, it's great to have that team of content creators that you get to interact with and have that level of comfort with. And I never expected that to be my experience with RHAP. Honestly, I didn't think I was going to get a spot in RHAP class of 2020. My audition was not that great, I felt so blessed to like be a part of this community and to really have like my creative endeavors in that world that I never thought would actually be available to me. And I just really appreciate that. Like, I love all the friends that I've made over the years, and that there's this whole other part to my life now that I never thought I was going to get to experience. Like, I never thought I'd be doing podcasting or writing about my favorite show or anything like that. And now not only am I doing that, but I have this big group of people to discuss with and just like enjoy the fact that we all get to do this together.
Yeah, that's so deep and it's powerful. And it's cool because it's strange to think that this pandemic happened and there was no RHAP class of 2020 of however many podcasters were brought on. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are some that we still hear from on we still hear from on RHAP and the podcast, and others who didn't stay around as long. But I think of, for me, like Mari, for example, in podcasting about wrestling, which I never thought I would podcast about and talk about to people in the world. I was like, this is such a weird thing that I grew up watching and still sometimes tune into. Like, who would have thought? Or even like having conversations with people about Survivor and these other things. Like, I mentioned Survivor Philadelphia, but that was my very first time meeting Survivor fans, like, let alone a group of Survivor fans in person and being in community and talking about the show and like surrounding ourselves in it. Like, that was huge. And so I relate to what you're saying so much, not to put you on the spot, but also to put you on the spot, like, who are some of the people you would kind of shout out as being like, as just, because I always feel like if anyone ever asks me this question, I will feel so horrible about my answer because I'm like, oh my God, I forgot so many people. But like, who are some of the people who have been part of that journey that you kind of just want to celebrate and shout out?
Let me just pull up some group chats or something.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Oh my God. No, I mean, I do have to shout out you and Mari, because I feel like you two have always been such a joy to podcast with, even for like, I never watch wrestling, but I'd watch wrestling for you guys. And I had a pretty damn good time talking about it with you for several hours, even though every time I podcast, apparently it's like you get bad news from wrestling. So I hope.
Oh my God.
I hope that doesn't happen today, but I love that so much. Isaiah, for, you know, in introducing me to Silent Podcast and inviting me to be on the team as part of the US Survivor correspondence, the coverage for that branch. I'm really excited to have like a platform where I can really go in depth to like my passion for Survivor. Oh God, I know I'm going to miss so many people too. I got to give a shout out to Martin Holmes for being the person that published all of my work on, Black Survivor. I'm so proud of the work that I've done over there. Christine, who I write my, Christine Palin, who I write my U.S. Survivor roundups with all the time. And I've been on her Stana Watu podcast, which is also great. It's great to have people that you relate to so closely with podcasting. You know, I have to give a shout out to like Chappelle, who we've been talking about Black Survivor forever. And I very much enjoy all of our conversations.
I love and respect Chappelle. I have to say, I love and respect him. Even sometimes I don't respect him. That's why I tell him to his face at least. But behind his back, I love and respect him dearly.
Yes, and I can't obviously I can't go without shouting out Naomi Calhoun and Nicole Horn. We podcast about Bravo TV together, Top Chef and Project Runway, which are like two of my deep loves for reality TV, and just podcasting with them regularly has been so much fun. Oh, who else? I feel like there's so many. Oh yeah. And then like my, I had something for this. Oh wait, no.
There's so many people.
No, there is so many people, but I want to end with the Survivor Diversity Campaign, but I don't want to skip over if there's anyone else. I feel like everybody that's been a part of the class of 2020 has meant so much to me. People that have asked me to come on their podcast or encourage me to get more involved with the community. Mm-hmm. I love and appreciate all of you. I have to give a shout out to Aaron Robertson, who was my Fiji buddy for the RHAP Top 40 Countdown. We did Fiji together. We both love Fiji. And it was just so nice to have another person that had that same enthusiasm. Rob Sesternino, obviously, for taking a chance on me like I wouldn't have, but he did, and I appreciate that. So
And this is all amazing, and like there's so many different people to shout out and things to recognize. I want to, before kind of like, well, I mean, there's every, you mentioned the Survivor Diversity Campaign. I feel like we'll, in our closing minutes, maybe we'll come back to that and there'll be some shout outs there, but I have a question that I love to ask people every single time as I wrap up about their title. If your life, Gia Worthy, were, by the way, I love your name.
I love my name too. I know.
So worthy. If your life were a book or documentary, Gia Worthy, future Dr. Gia Worthy, what would the title be and why?
So I feel like part of me feels like I should do a play on my last name, but nothing feels right with that. And, you know, like I am worthy, but that's not like the title of my book either. Honestly, so it's going to be a little serious for a second.
We love that.
My title would be One of Those Girls. And my reason for it is when I was in high school, I was in a relationship for a while that was not very healthy. And on the side, I was also subject to some not fun rumors about some of the things that we've discussed earlier. And when we eventually broke up, he said that I was turning into one of those girls. And what he meant was that because we got into some fights after we had broken up, and he didn't like the fact that essentially I was not behaving the way he feels like women that deserve respect should be behaving. And that goes into like presumed sexuality, presumed way of how I present myself and how I act, when really I am embracing the things that made me happy when being in that relationship had not made me happy for a very long time. And the fact that I chose to invest in my own happiness and do the things that made me happy and really embrace my independence and the things that make me happy What, you know what? If that makes me one of those girls, and like, I'm reclaiming it. I am one of those girls. Ooh. Because that is like, you know, I think choosing myself and my independence, like, you know, middle school me would have never expected me to be this happy with the way my life is right now. But I want to take that and reclaim it, because I, you know what, if that, if the way I'm acting or the way that I present myself or the way that I openly talk about sexuality, if that makes me one of those girls, then I absolutely am. And I encourage other people to find what makes them happy and find what can challenge their way of thinking and become one of those girls as well.
Yes, yes. And I love that. And I'm so like happy for you that you're conscious, like conscious enough, but like you're aware enough to like pursue that happiness and like take stock of like, how happy am I? Because it is like, it's really easy to kind of fool yourself into thinking you're happy, or to think that you have the life that you should have, because on paper, you know, maybe like, oh, this is everything I should want and I should have. And something I also find myself being like just conscious of, and sometimes I get upset a little bit or a little bit annoyed when people are like, oh my gosh, you did this thing that's really cool, and like, you must be so happy with it. And I'm like, those are not the things that should make any of us happy. You know, it's like, how do we choose to move about the world? Who do we perceive ourselves to be? And yeah, I love your title and you're phenomenal, Gia. And
thank you.
As we kind of get to that point of wrapping up, I mean, number one, just to kind of, I always want to give like the guests the chance to kind of wrap us up. But more than anything, I also want to come back to the Survivor Diversity Campaign and just see like, are there survivors you want to shout out, people involved with that that you want to shout out? And we're getting to that.
Yes.
I feel the time counting down on the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Before we get into that, can I just do a couple other shout outs that I forgot about?
Oh, you do whatever you want.
Thank you.
Shout out everybody.
I went to a Yankees game with Brian Cohen and Jordan Kalish, and that was a lot of fun. So I wanted to shout out that, because like two great podcasters, and I had a great time, and the Yankees won. So important things. Yes. And there was another one. Oh, yeah. Everyone in my International Survivor group chats and my BE group chat. I love all of you, all of the Black creatives that are out there. Thank you all for encouraging me and to be my best self, and all the content creators that I get to interact with in general. Mm-hmm. For the Survivor Diversity Campaign, they know they all have a special place in my heart. Davey Rickenbacker, for seeing that I was very passionate about that, about diversity in Survivor, and that I would make a great addition to the Survivor Diversity Campaign Twitter team. Al, Malcolm, and Andrew, who were all a part of my coverage for the season 42 finale, but also have always encouraged me to like really push the campaign as much as I can. And also, I've had amazing conversations with all of them regarding just being a Black Survivor fan. So I really appreciate that. And there are a couple other members of the Survivor Diversity Campaign as well, but I don't know if they want me to say their names or not. So they know that I have so much love and appreciation for them. And the Survivor players that I have interacted with have all been very kind. So I could probably give a list, but I won't do that. But
they know
like special,
who they are.
Yes, they know who they are. And like special mention to Anthony Robinson and Earl Cole, who have like read my piece on the Fiji Alliance and commented on it and said and like thanked me for writing it. That made my day, and so that made my year in so many ways, and I'm really appreciative of that, and the Fiji Five in general for just being themselves and putting themselves out there on a show and making one of the first all Black alliances in reality TV history and doing the damn thing. So thank you all very much.
Yes. Oh my gosh, Gia, look, one question I'll ask as we really wrap up is like, you know, what do you want the people to know? what do you want to say to the people as we close out? Like the final words are yours. Yay. This is your final tribal speech. Like, you are closing out the episode. Jeff Probst has said his final words, and now he's like, Gia, future PhD, tell the people what they want, or what you want to tell them.
I'd say that embrace the things that make you different, because that was what will make you shine. And also find the things that you love to do and find how you can use it to be your most happy version of yourself, but also help enrich other people's lives as well.
Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Pod Friends with Gia. I hope that along the way you had fun like we did. I hope you learned something along the way like we did. And I hope that you'll continue to tune in and also to share what you're gaining along the ways that you're informed, you're inspired, you're ignited to do something. What are you feeling? I want to know. Leave a voicemail at speakpipe.com/podfriends. That's speakpipe.com/podfriends. Looking forward to hearing from you there and to seeing and finding out more of the ways that these conversations resonate. I want to give a special shout out to Rob Sesternino, creator of Rob Has a Podcast, the network we're on, the man behind the podcast. Also to Scott St. Pierre. A special shout out to Hannah Lidsky, who just finished her 2 years with RHAP as the social media manager as she goes out on her own journey as a teacher doing phenomenal things in the world. Tricky Rice, Sam Moore, so many others behind the scenes. Thank you so much for being part of bringing this to life. Chelsea Lesser, thank you all for making Pod Friends a possibility and for ensuring that these conversations could come to you all each and every week. And we have more coming next week, the following week, all through this Survivor off season. And if you want to kind of keep up with me, with where I am, well, you could find me on Survivor Philadelphia, Head versus Heart. Go to Matt Scott GW and check out the link in my bio for a link to that, or go to bit.ly/SurvivorHVH, because I'm still in it. And hope that you'll tune in, because who knows, might not be there that much longer. Maybe I will be there that much longer. Who knows? But again, at Hey Pod Friends on social media, at Matt Scott GW on social media. I'm so grateful for all of you on social media, in person, virtually, all the ways that you show up and that you're here. Even if you're listening, it means a lot. And I just want to give you your flowers for being here. And as always, as I say at the end of each and every one of these episodes, thank you for being a pod friend.